Web Talk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com.
You're listening to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and thank you for listening to us from all over the world. We keep you plugged into the latest net trends and the coolest internet-connected devices.
Yes, Rob, hope is on the way in America.
Yes, it is.
We're feeling a little political because in the U.S., we've just had our Democratic National Convention this week, so we're going to cover a little bit of that in the story that we have coming up. I'm Dana Greenlee. Thanks so much for joining us. And the topics this week that we're going to cover, Rob.
Well, Dana, Microsoft has announced their bug fix for the IE browser.
And the web makes its way into Kerry's acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention.
What needs to happen to basically make everybody pay for Wi-Fi access?
And, of course, we'll dig into the digital mailbag. We're going to talk to Ginny from D.C. We'll spend a lot of time on the show today talking to Joe Membretti. He's a Northwest University researcher and a leading developer of the next generation, the third generation, of the Internet. Joe's director of the International Center for Advanced Internet Research, called ICAR, at Northwestern University. And he's going to share his broadband vision and give us a glimpse of the coming attractions on this new, fast, third generation Internet.
There's a technology called the computer-aided virtual environment, and this is a room that you walk into and interact with 3D objects. You create 3D virtual worlds that you step into, just like a holodeck on Star Trek. Using a technology called haptics, you actually can get physical feedback. There are some folks in Greece that are bringing ancient cities back to life. These are cities you can walk through. Another one is creating 1930s Harlem. You can walk down the streets, you can walk into a cafe, you can listen to the music.
After the net news, we're going to flash back in time, back into March of 2001, and re-air part of a conversation with two of the lone gunman guys from the X-Files television series in the U.S., and I'm sure most of you in the U.S. have probably heard of the X-Files and those three lone gunman guys who helped Scully and Mulder solve some of their cases. And they also got a spinoff series called The Lone Gunman. And we're going to speak with Dean Hagelin, who played Langley, and Bruce Harwood, who played Byers. And they're going to tell us about their roles with the X-Files. It'll be a fun journey back in time. And you can actually still go to their website at thelonegunman.com.
We had something like 7 pages of scenes where we sit around and talk to each other. So it's a lot of hanging around the computer, hacking into sites and stuff. And we were in our morning wear.
Morning
wear. That's right. I forgot. We were all in our PJs. That's right. So we spent half the day just sitting around in our underwear. So.
Hey, something for me to look forward to.
I wish I could paint it in your picture than what you're picturing in your head right now, but I'm afraid I can't.
Oh, I've got a good one. Pretty good one right now. Time for a little web news and trends. And what's that I hear? I think I hear, Rob, the sound of an ambulance rushing to our aid. Microsoft has dispatched a new patch.
Yes, they have. They've been scrambling to try and get their browser fixed. The Internet Explorer browser on Friday got a patch to its little security bug problems.
It's kind of a hefty patch. Isn't it like 2 megabytes or something?
Oh, it's like 2.8 megs. So it's a fairly significant update to the browser. And I think everybody remembers a couple weeks ago they were getting hammered pretty bad from the federal government, the U.S. federal government, saying don't use the IE browser. So this
Opera was behind
that. That's right. All the alternative browsers were picking up lots of new users. But this is a Service Pack 1 update, and Microsoft is saying it's a critical update. So everybody needs to go check their Windows Update program on their operating system. And this applies to every operating system that Microsoft ever made. So this is a significant upgrade to the IE browser. Yeah.
Even 98, they're not even upgrading that or anything. But Rob went around the house on all, 14 of our computers and installed the update.
They all got updated. And even our servers I even update, even though I don't do web browsing on our web servers.
No. Well, it can't hurt. Well, as we mentioned, the Democratic National Convention happened here in the U.S. Just so you all know who are listening from overseas, this is the time where we say, okay, we're going to have this person represent the Democratic Party, and that's what happened this week in Boston. But what's interesting about that is we were watching it, and for those of us that live and die by the web, how great was this quote? John Kerry said, "So now I'm going to say something that Franklin Roosevelt could never have said in his acceptance speech. Go to johnkerry.com." I loved it.
Yeah, it was great. It's great that the web actually made it into a political acceptance speech. I think it is the first. John Kerry's also raised about $5 million on his website just in the past week. So he's had a great success of raising money through his website, actually much more so than George Bush, the incumbent president here in the United States. If you compare the two websites, johnkerry.com and georgebush.com, John Kerry's raised $44 million as of May of 2004, and President Bush has only raised $4.5 million.
I think this says something about perhaps the technorati are kind of more focused on the Democrats, do you think? Because they're more on the web, and do you think that has any
bearing
actually, at all?
George Bush has got a pretty good website. He's got a blog. He's doing a lot of creative things. I think it has more to do with the demographics of who's liberal and who's Republican. Mm-hmm. There's probably some older people are part of the Republican Party than the Democratic Party, which tends to be a little on the younger side. So I think there's a big significant reason that there's more money being raised by John Kerry. And this is a good kind of a clue to what's coming in the future from a generational standpoint, how important politics and the web are together. It's going to be a powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, in fact, if you want to catch that acceptance speech, they did put up streaming video the day after the speech. It's a Windows Media 9 streaming video. Go to johnkerry.com, find the multimedia section, click on the video. They've got John Edwards' speech in there.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to actually link to it off of our site, too. So you can go to webtalkradio.com and find it right on our front page, too.
Well, I captured it digitally on my computer the whole hour and 15 minutes. And I decided I'm going to make a little music video because, at the end, they always have their theme music. And this one was U2 doing Beautiful Day. And it was quite patriotic.
Well, it was amazing. It was like it was snowing in the in the convention center. I mean, I remember some of the TV cameras. There was so much confetti falling down.
Confetti
falling down.
I heard a major malfunction with the balloons, though. Don Mishner, who's like the director producer of this whole big convention, who, by the way, I've talked to on the phone because I used to work down in one of the studios in LA, and he with one of the lighting directors, and he would call and coordinate getting mm-hmm. the directors. But he was up there like, I think, saying some cuss words because the balloons weren't falling properly.
Uh-oh.
Rob, you spent a little bit of time this week on Wi-Fi projects for a municipal city.
Yeah, the city of Tacoma, Washington, is finally getting on the bandwagon and has decided to start talking about building a citywide Wi-Fi network. And this could include city services, you know, fire, police, trying to support all those public service type functions, as well as a public network. And one of the things that's kind of come out of this is a lot of the cities don't really want to pay for the deployment of these type of networks. So what that's doing is that's putting some pressure on the private sector to come up with some business models that will actually generate some revenue from these. And one of the things that really is really going to make it possible, I think, for these things to really generate money is if we aggregate all of the every one of the Wi-Fi hotspots that are within a public area, like a coffee shop or a hotel or a restaurant that actually offers free Wi-Fi right now, and get them connected up to the municipal network. It's not hard to do. And then we can really aggregate a large group of access points and offer ubiquitous Wi-Fi. What a great concept. So that's just my two cents on it.
That's good. I do want to talk about something else you've been involved with over the last few months with Peter York, who mm-hmm. is a very well-known technologically adept guy. You have put together a website called
DownloadRadio.org. Actually, it's been built by Peter York, and mm-hmm. Peter York's been on Ken Radio. I'm sure a lot of our listeners know of Ken Radio, the radio show.
And well, and Michael.
Peter and Michael Pierce
has also built it.
Yeah. And this is a terrific site because what it basically enables is quick searching of radio shows, and Web Talk Guys is in there too, and so is Ken Radio, using the BitTorrent distribution network. It's a peer-to-peer file sharing network that allows for really fast downloads of media content. It's primarily being used for videos right now, or movies, but we've turned it on to be used for radio shows, and we're going to be plugging in lots of radio shows over the next few months, and there's a whole bunch in there right now, so go check it out at downloadradio.org.
Well, I'm reaching into the digital mailbag. Got a wonderful email from Jenny Wright. She's a student, a grad student, and an intern in Washington, D.C. She's originally from Illinois. But I want to read just a few things of what she said. We've actually corresponded back and forth a bit, and she has a nice blog. She says, I love listening to your show. I'm a grad student intern with a long commute to downtown D.C. every day. The commute is a lot shorter as I put all of your shows on my iPod. I think your shows are timely, informative, and never dull. And we are her number one source for new web information. Isn't that nice?
I feel so honored. That's great.
She says an added bonus is that she feels a little more web savvy now than even her dad, who was a software engineer. I love it. And she listened to us and our advice about IE and actually downloaded Opera and is now using that as her primary browser. I asked her a little bit about her iPod, what that was like having it, and she said that she, of course, wouldn't buy an iPod until she could put her entire CD collection. So she has the 15-gigabyte iPod. But I liked her viewpoint on this. She says, I'm a self-proclaimed techie geek, and she does carry her iPod wherever she goes. But she says, I'm seeing it now more as a status symbol than an electronic device. People are carrying it around and letting it be seen that they have an iPod, and that's like a cool
thing. It's like cool, yeah.
She says, perhaps it's a little in line with the Kabbalah bracelet that people are wearing now just to be sort of in. Mm-hmm. And she points out on her blog, which we're going to link to her blog, that now Target is carrying the Kabbalah bracelet. And so, I don't know. Anyway, you can find
out. It's not going to be cool for too much longer if Target's carrying it.
You can read about Jenny, the DC intern, at her blog at Irish Jenny. That's Irish, J-E-N-N-I, .blogspot.com. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you for the email. If you want to send us an email, send it to rob@webtalkradio.com.
Support for Web Talk Every Week is brought to you by good friends of ours. We have a new sponsor, Serenade Audio. It's at serenadesystems.com/webtalk. Don't forget the Web Talk part. They're incredible. Rob, tell everybody what they can do.
They enable you to download a bunch of radio shows like NPR, Ken Radio, Web Talk Radio is in there now on a schedule and have them go directly to your MP3 player. You don't have to do anything else. It does it all for you. Plus, they've got like 100 channels of music that you can download into the software program on your desktop.
You can't play it on that. Put that on your MP3 on your desktop.
But they've got like 300 other top talk, sports, and entertainment radio programs that you can put right on your MP3 player. So it's a terrific solution. We're all supported by web.com, the most trusted name on the net. Go check them out at web.com. They've got some terrific low prices on web domains as low as $4.95, and then they also have an e-commerce web hosting package as low as $7.95. So go check them out at web.com.
And don't forget our friends over at infocreek.com. You're looking to design a website. They're a great solution. It's at infocreek.com. All right, boys and girls, put on your safety belts because we're going to zip back into time, back to March 2001, for a conversation we had with the Lone Gunmen's Dean Haglund and Bruce Harwood. This is a conversation we had the week their very own show, The Lone Gunmen, premiered on Fox. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
What's the matter, Barb?
The matter is we don't have the proof. Without proof, we're nothing more than conspiracy mongers. Without proof, all we can do is cry wolf.
Don't take it personally, man. They strip-searched all of us.
It's all about convenience. Serenade Audio is a revolutionary new service that's redefining the MP3 player listening experience, allowing you to listen to what you want, when you want, anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. With Serenade Audio, you can download Web Talk Guys, plus over 300 news, talk, sports, and entertainment programs are available as well, and they can all be downloaded to your MP3 player with just one click. Easy and convenient.
Now, for a limited time, when you sign up for Serenade Audio, you'll receive over 100 music channels for your PC absolutely free.
To learn more, visit Serenade Audio on the web at serenadesystems.com/webtalk.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
Number two hacker in America? Why settle for number two when you can have number one? As long as we're talking computers, I got the man skills, so it's all downhill, if you know what I'm saying. Come check me out.
You're back with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and I'm Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is here also.
Well, we decided to jump back into time, back to March 2001, and we are part of a fun conversation that Rob and I had with the Lone Gunmen. You may remember them from the X-Files TV show. They also had their own show, The Three Lone Gunmen, were in a show in 2001 called The Lone Gunmen, a spinoff show from the X-Files.
We're going to let you listen to a short segment from the first episode of The Lone Gunmen TV show so you can get a flavor of what the show was like. And then after that, we're going to speak with Dean Haglund, who plays Langley, and Bruce Harwood, who plays Byers. And he's going to tell us about their roles on The X-Files. And actually, you can still see their website at thelonegunmen.com, and that's MEN.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. On behalf of our 14,000 employees, I am pleased to say, welcome to EcomCon, the most technologically advanced yet socially conscious company on the Fortune 500.
Yeah, right.
In this state-of-the-art research and development center, we're taking the next step in computer processor evolution, and we're creating a new age of innovation and customer service.
But a new age of invading your customers' privacy.
Sir, are you sure you're on the right tour?
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about that Octium 4 chip you're developing?
The Octium 4 is our latest high-speed processor. It's capable of 6.8 gigaflops. That's nearly 7 billion calculations per second.
I mean, tell us the truth. How the Octium is secretly designed to keep tabs on the users. It's got a tiny little modem embedded in each processor, see? So that it can upload your files onto the internet. And your credit history, and your tax bracket, and your social security number. All neatly packaged for these robber barons.
Sir, I don't know if this is the proper form.
And another thing!
Patriot 2. We're in position. Shut up already.
Is there peanuts in this?
Thank you for joining us on the Web Talk Guys radio show. My name is Rob Greenlee, and joining me also is Web Girl Dana.
Hi, guys.
Please let us know what you think about the Web Talk Guys show and give us some feedback on topics that you'd like to hear about. And if you have a question, please send them to me at feedback@webtalkguys.com.
Okay, guys. March is Lone Gunman Month. Did you know that? And to celebrate this, we have, of course, two of the most very cool guests in the universe on our show right now from the new TV show on Fox Network. That's The Lone Gunman that launched last Sunday. We have two of the three stars from The Lone Gunman. And if you're fans of The X-Files, you know them as the one that Mulder and Scully have to go to when they really need the big guns. Right, guys?
Yeah, exactly. That's the big guns. That's how we refer to ourselves.
Yeah, and you have them. And some little high-tech hijinks that you guys put on.
That's right.
They have a great, cool website called thelonegunman.com. I want to make sure you guys go and check that out. Right, Rob?
That's right. The new show is captivating, mysterious, and yet occasionally comical in a world of computer hacking, super-powered microchips, and government conspiracies. We have actors Bruce Harwood, who plays Byers on the show, and Dean Haglund, who plays Langley, on the phone from the studios up in Vancouver, B.C.
Hey, guys.
Hey, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I think all listeners would probably like to find out a little bit more about you guys. Where'd you guys grow up, and how'd you guys get started in acting?
Well, actually, we're both from Vancouver originally.
Oh, okay.
And how did we get us started acting? Well, that's... You mean you can't remember? I don't, actually. I was like 12 years old doing stage plays, I remember.
This is Dean talking, correct?
Yeah. That's Dean talking,
Now, you were a stand-up comic, I think, right?
That's right. I started doing stand-up to put my way through university to pay for a theater degree.
Bruce is cracking up.
Yeah, because he knows stand-up doesn't pay anything. It's actually really expensive.
Yeah, I didn't have anything at all, so I had no money. So at least you're one up on me.
I should have thought of that. That probably would have saved me a lot.
Well, I know that you guys have had a few gigs before the X-Files, but that was probably your first real big break, correct?
Well, at the time, it was just our first day on the X-Files. It was just one of many new shows that season, and I don't think either of us knew anything about it or particularly cared.
Yeah, it did sure seem like a big break. I mean, it was just going to be the one day, and then on to the next, you know, MacGyver or The Commish or whatever other shows we're shooting up here.
What is the story on how you guys actually got your X-Files roles to kind of get this whole thing rolling?
Oh, it was just a day player role. Three funny guys, they called me in, auditioned me, picked Tom. Tom was the AD at the time on the show, and they just sort of picked him. They grabbed him as he was exiting the washroom and said, just do this. Just do this for us. And, well, of course, Dean, you had to go through callback after callback or something.
Yeah, I actually read with other buyers, other actors who were, I guess you were the hardest to cast there, Bruce.
Yeah.
I know I read with three other people, including one really close friend of mine who never got it. Finally, when I met Bruce, I had never read with him. We met on set that day. Sort of.
That's incredible. So congratulations for you two going through the grueling process, whereas Tom just walked out of the men's room.
Yeah. Maybe we learned our lesson. We should just hang around the men's room.
I'm dying to know some specifics about the show, and I know that you can't tell us too much, but why don't you give listeners the sort of overview of basically the comedy that is Lone Gunman. I believe you have two new characters, is that correct?
I guess I could say that the premise is this is what we do when we're not helping Mulder and Scully. We publish a weekly underground newspaper called The Lone Gunman, hence our name, and every week we investigate a conspiracy or something similar, and that becomes the headliner of each weekly paper. And yeah, we pick up a couple of extra people on the way.
Who are, you know, the like of Robinson and Steady,
mm-hmm.
who sort of are the bookends to our characters. As a way of thinking of it.
What's been the most fun about having your own series?
You know what the most fun has been is just being, honestly, I can't pick anything specific. I just have to say it's the work. It's working with the cast, who are great fun. It's working with the crew, who are also great fun. As always, I always say that the best part about acting is the actual acting. And as generally, actors spend all their time getting the work and not actually doing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so this is a real treat to be coming in to work every day.
Bruce, I know a lot of people know that you're filming up in Vancouver as opposed to Hollywood. How is that different for you? And just give us a peek inside. Let's just say, what was it like on the set yesterday? What did you do? Or what do you have coming up tonight?
Oh, man, yesterday.
Yesterday was a long day.
Yeah. We had something like 7 pages of scenes where we sit around and talk to each other.
So it's a lot of hanging around the computer, hacking into sites and stuff. And we were in our morning wear.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot we were all in our PJs.
That's right. So we spent half the day just sitting around in our underwear and PJs. And,
hey, something for me to look forward to.
Well, Dana, I wish I could paint it a prettier picture than what you're picturing in your head right now, but I'm afraid I can't.
Oh, I've got a good one, pretty good one right now.
Well, you guys were actually on the show being filmed in your pajamas. Is that what we have to look forward to here?
Well, you have to realize that Byers, anyway, because he wears a suit and tie normally, so even when he's in his PJs, he's dressed up.
Right.
I had black socks and slippers on and a really nice full set of PJs and then a dressing gown on top of that.
You know what?
Very immaculate, whereas mine looked like something left over from a Guns N' Roses tour.
Oh, I like that, too.
You
know, while we're on the subject of nudity, or almost nudity, I was watching a Chris Carter Yahoo chat today, and he was asked if the fellow that plays the assistant director Skinner is going to be making an appearance and showing some skin. Is that going to happen, or is that just a rumor?
I knew he does make an appearance, but I don't think he strips at any time, as far as I know.
Okay.
I wasn't there for that scene.
Yeah, no, I don't think he was. Our show is... it's going to be about conspiracy theories and fighting the powers that be. So if that includes nudity, I can't see how it actually would come together.
Well, there is, to also whet your... Since we're on the topic of nudity here, there is an episode where my character goes to Texas Death Row, and I do have a shower scene.
With
a bunch of other naked men.
Now we're getting the dirt here.
I don't know if we really should be. That's not how all the episodes are going to go, by
No.
Well, and we're not even in sweeps, I don't think.
Right? That's right. No, that's right. We're coming up on it. So how is the Lone Gunman going to kind of marry up a little bit with the X-Files? Is there going to be any ongoing connection at all, character-wise or plot-wise?
Not really. There's going to be at least one crossover with, of course, Mitch Pileggi playing Skinner, and possibly one or two more. But they're going to really stay away from the aliens and the goo and the things coming out of people's orifices and, you know, all those gooey things.
Yeah, we've seen them.
Yeah, we're going to stay pretty dry.
Yeah, it'll only be gooey if it's funny.
That's right.
I don't know if you guys are being protected from this kind of filth, but, you know, you guys have an estrogen brigade out there, too. It's not just Duchovny that has that. And on the fan sites.
I've heard there's flash fiction, but I'm really afraid to read it.
Do you go check out the fan sites out there, and do you have a favorite? And what do you think of your own website, thelonegunman.com?
I actually have my own website that I had since 95.
Oh, you do?
DeanX.com.
Say that again?
DeanX, okay. Five letters, my name plus the letter X. So a lot of fans can write to me there. Invariably, the other fan sites will keep me updated on what's going on around the web. So often I don't have time, but I'll have my webmaster keep me up to date as to the estrogen brigades and the fanfic and that sort of thing.
Bruce, how about you?
Oh, well, I'm not online, I have to say. So I haven't had a chance to see these sites. So I've heard about them, but certainly I keep getting these little memos in my trailer telling me what's been going on.
Now, isn't your wife a teacher?
Yes, that's right.
She should be getting you online.
That's
teachers
right.
are in education. It's all about being on the internet.
But, you know what? At her school, there's only one computer online.
Oh.
And you have to sign up for it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I think you need to donate some salary there.
Yeah, I think so. Public education.
Yeah, the hell with public education.
Well, I'm a Ramones fan. I see you have the poster up on your in your little hovel.
That's true.
Who is the Ramones fan, or is that just a character thing?
Well, that was actually the very first episode when we first appeared in the X-Files in season one. Our characters were created by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, and they envisioned my character specifically to be wearing a Ramones t-shirt. It said that exactly in the script. So I was a bit of a Ramones fan, but since I've been wearing the t-shirts and others as well, I've come a lot closer to them than I thought I ever would.
Can you spell that out for us?
Well, I people will send me lots of Ramones paraphernalia as a way of connecting to my character, a lot of fans. So
okay.
I get other t-shirts and CDs and that sort of thing.
So we're not talking any homoerotic closeness.
No. Okay. Dana, I got to say, you got a one-track mind.
Hey, guys, what is it about the Lone Gunman characters that has really kind of taken off and been such a fascination with the audience? Is there anything that you guys can pin it to?
If I could answer that question, sure. Boy, I'd have probably my own TV series.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's very unusual that I think the Lone Gunman has taken off. I mean, there was certainly an essence of timing, particularly with the growth of the Internet and the web chats and that sort of thing, and that the gunman sort of represented that culture, as well as being on a very well-written show with Chris Carter and Frank and all of those writers, writing our characters that really gave us a quality that you probably wouldn't have gotten if you had just thought, oh, we're going to make a sitcom out of these guys or something like that. I don't think that would have flown. So it was a confluence of circumstances that really have attributed to the success of us.
It occurs to me, certainly, that if anybody else writing these characters would have written them as conventional geeks, I think, with tape on the glasses and, you know, funny accents, stuff like that, and instead what they came up with were these, well, what they came up with, these three odd-looking guys.
And not odd-looking, really. I mean, Bruce, particularly, you are a handsome devil.
Well, thank you.
And Langley, I should say
Dean. Listen, Dana, you know, you don't have to even just sign up to me.
You know, I really, really enjoyed back in season six your three-of-a-kind trip to Vegas. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
And there was definitely some sort of flirtation going on with the character of Scully. Now, are any of you guys going to take credit for her condition?
Actually, we'll give that to Tom. Tom Karen-Frohicke, since he's not here.
I saw that passionate kiss in the first episode. Yeah,
it's all his fault, right?
Exactly.
James Bond girl.
That's right. And he's responsible for the abduction, I think.
Who's going to get the next spinoff first?
Funny, actually, if you saw the pilot, there's the character who plays Kimmy, who helps us hack into the DOD, the Department of Defense site.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He actually is coming back for two more episodes this season.
Yeah.
So now we're joking with him, you know, that that's exactly how we got our start to get our own series. So perhaps this Kimmy character will get his own spin.
It would have to be called Kimmy the Next Generation or something.
That's right.
Well, let's take a moment and listen to an audio clip from The Lone Gunman.
We won't do for the Constitution.
Yeah, like having a roll tight and shoved up our kazoos. At least it feels like that.
Yeah, we're not going to let this injustice stand. We're going to stop these corporate goons from doing to the American people what they did to us last night.
Yeah, right.
What's the matter, Byers?
The matter is we don't have the proof. Without proof, we're nothing more than conspiracy mongers. Without proof, all we can do is cry wolf.
Don't take it personally, man. They strip-searched all of us.
11 years we've been putting out this paper. Think about it. Have we really made a difference? Is America a better place to live because of our efforts? This story would have garnered national attention. It would have forced Ecom Con to halt the production of the Octium chip. It would have protected the civil liberties of millions of Americans. But without proof?
Well, we could still speculate, can't we? We'll call it editorial commentary.
For whom? Last week's issue had a circulation of 2,824. You're preaching to the converted.
The readership doesn't matter, man. It's the impact on the black ops that counts. They read it, too. The guys at the NSA and the CIA, they tremble every time we put out one of these babies.
I should have thought of that.
Can you guys give us any teasers on this coming episode?
This will be the second episode.
Yeah, it'll be the second episode here.
Well, this is when we get introduced to another one of our new guests, a new lead performer, isn't that? Steve Snedden playing Jimmy Bond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what else? Oh, we're tracking down, what are we doing?
I get abducted. I get taken hostage.
Yeah, but not by aliens.
Oh, that's what I was saying. You probably get tested on here a little bit, huh?
Yeah. What else happens? Well, we find out exactly how the lone gunmen get their money.
Or not.
Or not, as the case. That was our question. How do we get all this high-tech equipment if we're just selling, like,
2,000 newspapers. It was 2,000. I beg to differ.
Oh, right. 2,000.
Yeah. Over 2,000.
I forgot our subscription rate went up there. So that's sort of a teaser of what you'll see in the next episode.
Do you guys have a favorite writer? I know that you've obviously got some of the X-Files writers to write your episodes. Or are we going to see one of you guys direct or write an episode?
Well, Tom, having already been an assistant director and a director and a producer, he's hoping that if the series gets picked up for a second year, that he might get a hand at directing some episodes.
But, you know, it requires one of these episodes are, you know, 14 hours a day, every day to shoot. So in order to get the time to write or direct, sort of need a couple weeks off, perhaps the upcoming episode. It's hard for the writers and producers to think how they're going to give us a day off in order to, or a week off, or a whole episode off.
I can't imagine you guys' schedule.
Yeah.
And in fact, later on tonight, I think you did mention before the interview that you're going to be jumping into a lake.
A river, actually.
Oh. Up in Vancouver, this will be cold.
It will be very cold. We're looking at, I guess the water will be maybe 38 degrees Fahrenheit, and it'll be going at about 15 knots. There'll be a strong current, and we'll be doing some espionage, and it's supposed to be Miami, so there'll be some real acting there.
By the way, we just learned that Miami is the leader in the nation of use of streaming media. Is that weird, or what?
That is weird. Is that a new statistic?
Yes, that's a new statistic just out this week. Now, you guys are headquartered, is it in Tacoma Park, Maryland?
That's right.
That's wonderful.
You really did watch the pilot.
Oh, yes, we did.
I went to high school in Tacoma Park. Goldie Hawn was from Tacoma Park.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Just a little.
Maybe she could visit the set someday.
There you go.
Right. We'll just hang around our house.
No, I had no idea where our offices were, actually, until I saw that little tag underneath the opening scene.
That's right.
It's like for 8 years, and the X-Files, where's our offices anyway? And finally, aha!
Yeah, in fact, we never had a permanent set for the longest time. They would just bring a lot of computer gear wherever they were shooting on location and find an empty room, stick the computer gear in, and that would be the temporary lone gunman office.
You know, your characters really are at the mercy of the writers. You don't know anything.
Yeah, it's true.
About yourself. We've been talking with actors Bruce Harwood. He plays Byers on the show The Lone Gunman, and Dean Haglund, who's Ringo Langley, who says bingo a lot for some reason, B-I-N-G-O.
Yeah, that's odd too, isn't it?
That's right.
Rhymes with Ringo.
That's right. You can catch it on Sundays at 9 o'clock on Fox, and then it'll switch over to Fridays on March 16th, then back to Sundays, and then back to Fridays. Isn't that a cute little merry-go-round, I'm sure? But we can keep up with you.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
That's great,
thank you,
guys.
Go to the website. It's very cool, thelonegunman.com. Thank you both.
Hey, thank you guys for joining us on the show. It was great.
Oh, our pleasure.
Talking with you guys, and we certainly will be watching, as I say.
Thank you, and thanks, Dana.
We're okay. Looking forward to you guys being renewed for the fall, right?
Knocking on wood.
Yeah.
<That's right. laughs> Have a great weekend, okay?
And thank you very much.
All right. Take
Have
care.
A good swing.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Up next, just hang in there because Joe Mambretti will be with us. He's the Northwestern University researcher and a leading developer in the next generation internet, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about holodecks.
Holodecks and very high speed internet that's coming down the line. This is Web Talk Radio. This is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. If you currently would like to listen to music and talk radio programming on your MP3 player, I've got an insider tip on a cool new download service called Serenade Audio. Serenade Audio is a revolutionary new radio service that's going to change your MP3 player listening experience. Serenade Audio enables you to schedule and automatically download Web Talk Radio, NPR, Ken Radio, and over 300 other top talk, sports, and entertainment radio programs right to your MP3 player through your PC. You'll be able to listen anytime, anywhere, at home, on the go, or at the gym. And when you sign up for Serenade Audio and download the software, you'll receive over 100 free music channels for your desktop. And Serenade Audio also offers a 15-day trial on the download before you buy. So listening to the radio on your schedule doesn't get any easier, so go visit Serenade Audio at serenadesystems.com/webtalk and start downloading today.
Webhead, download this or you'll be sorry.
You are back and connected with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is here ready to surf the web.
Well, I bet we're all feeling a little cutting edge right now because we've got these big fat broadband pipes through our internet connections, and what we do online with our high-speed downloads and our movies and our interactive games. But really, you'll be surprised to learn that we are sort of still in the horse and buggy era of the broadband connectivity.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but we certainly are. We are joined on the line by Joe Mambretti, who is a Northwestern University researcher and a leading developer of the next generation internet, and that's the third generation internet. Joe is also the director of the International Center for Advanced Internet Research, and it's at icar.org, and that's icair.org at Northwestern University, and he's going to share with us his broadband vision and give us a glimpse of the coming attractions on the third generation internet. Joe, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Why don't you tell us about the program and the research that you have going on there, and what's really your focus related to the online world and the internet?
All right. I'm director of the International Center for Advanced Internet Research, which is at Northwestern University.
Mm-hmm.
It's located in a research park, which is just west of the campus. This is Northwestern's campus, located in Evanston, Illinois, which is the first suburb just north of Chicago,
mm-hmm.
even though Northwestern also has a downtown Chicago campus.
Oh, okay.
We basically, we're specialists in next generation networking technologies.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on large-scale infrastructure and mm-hmm. large-scale applications, which require support by that infrastructure. So by large-scale, what I mean is, for example, international networks,
mm-hmm.
national networks, statewide networks, regional networks, and metropolitan area networks. What we don't focus in on is enterprise network. We also do not deal with anything having to do with telephone. We also, in general, do not deal with the what's called the commodity internet. In other words, the internet that most people use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's something we did many years ago. We helped develop the first generation internet and the second generation internet. Now we're developing the third generation.
As I say, you're moving on beyond the old internet or the internet that we know today, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And were you in the Chicago area at the university when the first generation, you know, was kind of developed in the more graphical interface?
I was. In fact, I remember a meeting at Argonne National Laboratory, where a project was described, and it was described in 1993 as a new project.
Mm-hmm.
And this was called a viewer for high-energy physics data and documents.
Sounds very compelling.
Yes.
And it had the name, project name Mosaic.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. That's the buzzword.
You were in the meeting.
Yes, that's right. And it was based on a web server that was created at CERN, Switzerland, by a fellow by the name of Tim Berners-Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a preliminary interface. However, the folks at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at Urbana-Champaign, University of Illinois, basically decided to do a better interface, and they created this thing called Mosaic, a team led by Mark Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And that went into the world late 1993,
yeah.
And within a few months had a few million users.
Yeah, and it's kind of grown exponentially from there.
Off.
Yeah,
that was 11 years ago.
That's pretty much a great badge to wear, Joe. I think
yeah,
that's wonderful.
That's great.
Well, it's great, but all I did was attend that one meeting and watch that process. But to me, the most interesting thing about that is we are now working on projects that are as innovative, maybe more innovative than that particular project. And what we sometimes have to tell people when they view what it is we're doing, that it's sort of like having a view of the Internet from a perspective of 1993. That mm-hmm. is, you begin to see something. Because I remember at the time, people looked at Mosaic, and there were some people that said, this is great, and it's going to change everything. Other people said, you know, businesses will never use that.
Yeah.
And similarly, we're creating technologies, and it's getting a mixed reaction. But in general, it's getting very favorable reaction.
Yeah, that's the fascinating thing about what's happened with the Internet is in the early days, I think people were not thinking really with real strong vision about what could happen. And I think that's what we're facing right now to a certain extent is that I'm sure that you're working on technologies that people don't really understand yet or understand the implications or the creative mind really hasn't been applied to it yet to come up with really fascinating ways of using that technology.
Well, the creative minds are being applied to it.
Yeah.
The missing piece is an understanding among the greater public.
Yeah,
and
okay.
That's why
exactly.
I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you folks,
wow.
Maybe get the message out, because when you look at the current Internet and mm-hmm. the way most people are using it, to us it looks like an antique.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you have a graphic user interface that's mainly text and images. Video is horrible. You have to use these hard-to-deal-with, for most people, computers.
Yeah.
And that is not the way the Internet is evolving. It's evolving towards something else. So often people ask the question, well, what is the third-generation Internet? In fact, what's the second generation?
Well, yeah, where are we right now? Are
yeah,
we
where
in
are
the
we
second
now?
Generation?
These are all good questions.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are dealing with the first-generation Internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a packet-routed network. In other words, the information is sliced up into tiny little bits. The bits are sent around on what's called a best-effort network. In other words, the packets go as best they can, best effort. There's no determination of quality in general. So mm-hmm. sometimes it's congested and you get bad response. Sometimes it's not. You get good response. That's first-generation Internet.
Mm-hmm.
The second-generation Internet is a little more sophisticated in that it has techniques for determining what packets can go where and whether they should go with a higher or lesser quality of service. And some people are experiencing that Internet. Not very many. It's mainly large enterprises.
Oh, okay. So most people are still in really the first stage and moving
T,
in the second?
That's correct. Model T
mm-hmm.
Internet.
Model
They're chugging along in their standard black car winding it up in the morning.
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of the I don't know how many million dial-up users probably feel that way, too. They're in the horse and buggy days.
Indeed. So then the question is, okay, what is the third generation?
Yeah,
Internet?
Well, I'm excited to hear this.
Yeah, there are really two components to it. One is a description of the core technologies, which I'll mention first, because
okay.
Then most people want to know, you know, what's this going to do for me?
Yeah.
Forget about the core technologies, but I'll talk about the core technologies.
Okay. Well, that's an important piece.
Yeah. And the core technologies, the way to think about this is the current Internet really runs on the old telephone system.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there is a protocol called SONET, Synchronous Optical Network, that everything runs on, and that was really designed to support telephone calls, not the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So most people don't realize the Internet actually runs on old-fashioned telephone infrastructure. And a lot of it runs, at the edge at least, on old-fashioned copper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people talk about their fast DSL. Well, DSL really is not fast. DSL is just a protocol to allow Internet to run over copper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to get away from all that. So we want to get away from the old-fashioned architectures, the old-fashioned copper. We want to go to fiber. So what we're doing at the technical level, at the core level, is create a new type of Internet which has the sophistication to tell where packets are going and how they should go and the quality of service, but also is supplemented by very agile optical core networks. And so we're developing new types of optical channels and dynamic provisioning of those optical channels. And one of the things that means is that the information is going to flow incredibly more faster than it does today. So you can have enormous amounts of bandwidth. And we are not only experimenting with this huge amount of bandwidth today, but we're also implementing these types of new networks in prototype. And these are not just in metro areas. For example, mm-hmm. we run the world's most advanced photonic network as a test bed here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But also we're putting these on statewide test beds, such as a test bed in Illinois, which we call iWire, the Illinois Wired Wireless Infrastructure for Research and Education.
Mm-hmm.
This is a private network for advanced applications. Also, we're developing an international Translite network, which is connecting Japan and Canada, the Netherlands in Europe, London, Scandinavia, the Czech Republic, and CERN Switzerland, other locations. And this is a very super high-speed network going at many gigabits per second.
Okay.
In fact, third major link from Netherlite is just coming in. That is a 10 gigabit per second link. So from a new facility we have in Chicago called Starlight, Science, Technology, and Research Access Point, that is connecting to Netherlands at 20 gigabits per second. And we have another link to London called UK Light at 10 gigabits per second. We have links into Canada, as I said, Asia Pacific. So it's not just in the labs, mm-hmm. not just experimental. These networks are up and running today.
They're actually functioning.
We're in the middle of a conversation with Joe Mombretti about the third generation Internet. Stay tuned. We'll have more with Joe in just a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophosts.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
You are listening to the Web Talk Guys.
You are back with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee is here also.
And joining us, of course, is Joe Mombretti. He's been talking to us about his work with the third generation Internet. That's as director of the International Center for Advanced Internet Research at Northwestern University.
Well, now, is there really any kind of limit to how much bandwidth can run through a fiber optic network? I've heard people say that it's really unlimited and what the potential is for that kind of a fiber optic transmission.
That's a great question. So let me answer that by talking a little more technology.
Sure.
There was a technology that was invented in the late 1980s called dense wave division multiplexing. That was to allow information to travel over fiber instead of copper, because it was very expensive to put copper over mountains. And basically, that technology takes light, divides it up into colors, and allows you to put different optical channels on each one of those colors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and today you can get equipment which has 180 channels on an individual piece of fiber. In the lab, it's possible to put as much as 1,000 optical channels on each piece of fiber. And on each one of those fibers, currently, you can easily put 10 gigabits per second. We're doing that on our photonic testbed in Chicago. We have multiple 10 gigabits on fibers. You can, in the future, put 40 gigabits.
Oh,
and in the lab, you can put more than that.
It's going to keep growing and growing and growing,
exactly.
I think. Yeah.
So the short answer is, yes, you're right. You can put a huge amount of information on each of the fibers. So it's not infinite, but it's pretty substantial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also it seems like the whole infrastructure that we have in the world right now would have to be transferred over to optical fiber in order to accommodate that. Do you see that happening over the next 10 or 20 years?
The nice thing about the telecom implosion is that it was based on the provisioning of fiber. There's
mm-hmm.
hundreds of billions of dollars that were invested in creating fiber,
mm-hmm.
and that's all out there to be used today.
Mm-hmm.
Only about 4% is being used.
Oh, really?
So there's a huge amount of fiber out there. That's
yeah.
not to say it's in all the places that it's needed, but it's certainly in many places.
Yeah, it probably needs to get to the outer edges before it's really useful, I would think.
Well, I don't know about that. The way research works is, people create these innovations, and it first is used by the research organizations,
mm-hmm.
then
okay.
by government agencies, then by large corporations, then by small companies, and then finally by consumers.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so that's the feeding chain, and so it can be very, very useful even before it gets to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's being used now.
Let's move on and talk a little bit about what is passing through these high-speed
right.
broadband fiber optic networks out there. What kind of content are you seeing as really being the type of things that are being used across these networks? I think I saw in your research you covered a lot with media, and it seems like that's kind of the next generation of where everything is going. It seems like all the PCs are getting huge hard drives and things like that. Is that what you're seeing as far as what the real sweet spot is for these fiber optic networks is like video and audio?
Well, that's certainly one part of it. We do spend a lot of time in advanced digital media.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the applications. And one way to think about this is if you look at your internet today, mainly what you're seeing is text and graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
So there's pictures, there's words, there's crummy little video. Well,
it's
why?
Getting better, yeah.
But yeah, but why should that be, right?
Yeah.
And why should you look and see this little file folder? The future is going to be interactive 3D multimedia. And one of the things we're doing is we're developing a multimedia portal. It is allowing innovative ways of accessing and using information. So one of the things we're doing with media, before we get to the portal, is we are doing a multicast of media around the world. So, for example, for the last 4 years, we've had a partnership with C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
And through that partnership, we've been multicasting C-SPAN channels 1 and 2 worldwide across next-generation internet networks.
Wow, that's great.
We're now expanding those capabilities, doing things such as specialty broadcasts. We worked with the Field Museum to do a specialized broadcast from the Field Museum celebrating the first anniversary of Sue the Dinosaur. Also, last December, we supported a multicast from the Radiological Society of North America conference at McCormick Place.
Mm-hmm.
We have a special session called Image Interpretation Session where experts get on a stage, they look at difficult-to-diagnose images, and they do diagnostics. Well, we multicast that worldwide. We had 200 people in 30 countries watching that.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2 megabit per second for the image and 2 megabits for the people on the stage, 2 megabits per second.
Wow.
We also were supporting at that conference 3D modeling of medical imaging across these advanced networks.
Oh, now that has implications of, I think you mentioned in your paper about how it can help expert medical, you know, surgeons look at patients or something like that.
Yes, exactly. And one of the demonstrations we did last year was in Geneva with CERN, a particle physics lab there. The United Nations put on a forum called the World Summit for the Information Society, and we did a demonstration showing how these next generation networks could help healthcare worldwide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they can help healthcare with regard to clinical practice, with regard to teaching, and also with regard to fundamental research. So they have enormous implications for all types of healthcare.
I just have to draw you back for a second to the media portal, because you said something that got me so excited, and you talk about something called CAVE, and you talk about an immersive VR environment. I know we don't have that much time left. I would love you to cover what's coming down the road with
that. Sure. Well, let me just mention three things. One of the things we're doing, as I said, is multicasting standard digital video. So, for example, we're taking entertainment channels and putting them into the dorms at Northwestern. That's done through a technology called Video Furnace, which is done through a startup near Chicago. And so the students can actually watch entertainment TV on their PCs. That's step one.
These are like regular TV channels, right, that you guys are funneling through an IP network?
Yeah, okay. ABC, Fox, CNN, C-SPAN, those channels. Because the students never had the money to put into cable, so now they get to see this. And the interesting thing there is that we're license limited just to the campus, but the technology can go worldwide, we're proving with C-SPAN. So that's what I would call step one. You're just taking regular TV and you're putting it on the internet, and certainly that's going to happen. That's part of convergence. Step two is the media portal. That is allowing for different things to happen with that media. So, for example, what we can do is we can have people search through media by, well, we have an agent that finds every major scene change and then displays the video as a bunch of JPEGs. So instead of having to scroll through the video, you just see all these JPEGs and you just select the segment that you want.
You can skip ahead that way a little
bit. Exactly.
Okay.
And then you can just double-click on whatever segment you want and it displays. In other words, you don't have to watch TV when you want. You can watch it whenever you want, not when it's broadcast, but also you can search through it in different ways. Another agent we have is one that takes the analog, translates it into text, fully indexes the text, and then does pointers back to the video. Where in the video did somebody say water? And it will display that segment in the video. So, and that's the next stage where you're doing something different than you could do simply with your old-fashioned TV as opposed to just putting a broadcast on the internet.
So are you able to actually do that just with the regular PC processors right now, or are you using really high-level processors to be able to do this?
Regular processors can do it. In fact, they can keep two channels active simultaneously, and some of the students watch TV with two channels going plus doing their homework.
True multitasking of
the next generation,
yeah.
So the next stage then has to do with making all of this 3D, and we're working on that. There's a technology called the computer-aided virtual environment, which was created at the Electronic Visualization Lab at the University of Illinois at Chicago, one of our research partners. And this is a room that you walk into and interact with 3D objects. And that's taking this concept one step further. Instead of just watching, even on demand, a flat image of the video, you create 3D virtual worlds that you step into.
I think you teased us in your report with the word holodeck, and that
got us very excited. It's just like a holodeck on Star Trek. That is 3D objects, and you can interact with it. Using a technology called haptics, you actually can get physical feedback. So it appears as a hard object to you.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
And there's a variety of applications that are being used today. For example, cars are being designed using this technology. Aerospace components are being used, are being developed with it. A building was built on the campus of the Illinois Institute of Technology by some architects using this technology. Also, there are some folks in Greece that are bringing ancient cities back to life. One is Miletus. Another city is being created for the Summer Olympics. These are cities you can walk through. Another one is creating 1930s Harlem. You can walk down the streets. You can walk into a cafe. You can listen to the music.
Now, you still have the headgear. I mean, this is still what we see where we're actually in our head. We're not in a room that has these visual representations like on Star Trek.
Actually, there is no headgear.
Really?
You are in a room.
Really?
Amazing.
Yes.
Ah.
For the CAVE today, you do wear glasses, though. So they're stereoscopic glasses. However, currently there is a technology that is just now being developed, so you can see it in the labs, that allows you to see the 3D without having to wear the glasses.
Wow, that's terrific.
You're just looking at it with your natural self, and it looks 3D. Do you remember the image of Princess Leia that she was standing on the table?
Yeah, I do, from Star Wars, yeah.
Well, see, that's now a possibility.
Wow, that's great. Well, now, when are we going to see this stuff kind of be, you know, available for people to jump into and experience? And what do you see as the evolution of that over the next, I mean, is it the next 5 years or so we're going to be able to see really advanced worlds like this that anybody can get into?
Well, again, you have to go through that cycle of research labs first, and then the large government agencies, then the big companies. And so you can experience this by visiting labs today. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a while before it gets out there to general consumers, but it will probably start appearing, as this technology usually does, in specialty forums. I can imagine it's already beginning to appear in forums like the Radiology Society of North America. I mean, at McCormick Place, that's the largest medical conference in the world.
Wow.
60,000 people show up, and people are seeing these 3D images. So it's happening at that level. Also, it's being used in some medical research centers, mm-hmm, to do clinical practice, to, for example, planning surgery, also for research and for education. So it's beginning to get out into the greater world beyond the research labs.
So are you doing any research in the area of wireless broadband at all in conjunction with these things, or are you guys focused primarily on just the optics right now?
Well, currently our forte is large-scale optical transport, mm-hmm, and you really don't get that with wireless. Mm-hmm. The only wireless experiments that we've been involved in had to do with doing some modeling that are using optical channels to support wireless, so we really haven't gotten into that a lot. Another reason that's less interesting to us is no matter what you do, you're not going to get the performance out of wireless that you can with, mm-hmm, optics. It'll never be as fast as the optic.
Do you see it being close to that at some point, or is there a concern of putting out too much radiation, you know, amongst humans?
No, you'll see a lot of high-speed wireless that will be safe to use, and, mm-hmm, you'll be able to do a lot with that. You'll see that coming into the home rather quickly. What you'll find is you're going to have higher speed inside the home than outside the home.
Outside, sure.
Right? And people want to do that. For example, once upon a time, your stereo didn't understand MP3, which, mm-hmm, was really odd because everyone listens to MP3.
Yeah.
Right? But now, not only is it capable of playing MP3, but also you can do that wireless. And similarly, people want to put in a DVD into a component in one part of their house and see it displayed on plasma screens elsewhere, not just on one attached to that device. So that you will see very soon. That's going to start coming out in many consumer products.
Yeah, that's great. Why don't you tell us how, you know, some of our listeners can go look into your projects? Is there some things online that can be read and found on the web?
Certainly. There's our website, which is icair.org. That's iCare, International Center for Advanced Internet Research. We are an international center. We are working with people worldwide on these technologies, mm-hmm, given the scale of the project. It's too large for any one corporation or organization. Another site I would suggest people look at, because it's a fascinating site and they're doing quite a bit, is the Electronic Visualization Lab at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And that would be www.evl.uic.edu. That's a good site. And the folks at Argonne National Lab are doing many different kinds of things. That's anl.gov.
Well, this is terrific. Mm-hmm. I am so excited. Thank you for letting us peek into the future,
Joe. Yeah,
Joe.
We certainly appreciate having you on. It's great.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. The future's not what it used to be.
That's true.
Or better.
We're looking forward to the third generation internet where we can actually experience things in a much more advanced way. We're tired of being in the horse and buggy era, so we want to move on.
That's right. And you'll be able to multicast at very high speed worldwide your own show. You'll be a channel on the next generation.
There you go.
Oh, that sounds good.
That's exciting. Well, Joe, thank you and take care.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for the show this week, but we really appreciate you listening in. We expect to do a lot more next week.
Thank you for letting us into your lives and your ears, and we look forward to having you listen to us next week. And between now and then, go check out our website at webtalkradio.com, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.